Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
We didn't come to anyone live from some hoity-toity free thought library on the 1st of November, 2017. No, sir. We mumbled to ourselves, and we were lucky to be able to do that. In my day, we didn't have no sponsorship from some fancy atheist community of Austin. We wouldn't have recognized a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state if it had come up and kissed us full on the lips. We was just happy to be mumbling into our paper bags, which was a thing we did back when we could afford paper bags. We certainly couldn't have afforded any nonsense like voicemail you could reach at 512-220-6561 or these newfangled websites at strange addresses like www.atheist-community.org. Really, what kind of bullshit address is that? We may do with directions like knowing where the feed store used to be. Let me tell you, we'd sit here mumbling into our bags, when we could afford bags, every first and third Wednesday of every month. Didn't matter if we knew what we was saying. Usually better if we didn't, come to think of it. And people would have to poke at us or slap us to talk to us and not follow some crappy directions to a frilly-dilly chat room at www.nonprofitsradio.com. We was happy back then. Didn't need no one to sit back and enjoy our mumbling. No, sir.
Thank you there, howdy. Cousin Dennis.
Well, howdy.
How's everybody doing out there in radio?
Radio land.
Tell you what.
Well, this ain't no radio. Where's that static? Where's that AM static?
Everywhere is going to say that Clint Eastwood is the biggest yellow belly in the West. Sorry, movie quotes is all I can do.
Anyway, here we are. It's November now. Uh-huh. Barely. We had a Halloween. Everybody have a fun Halloween-y, weenie-weenie?
Yeah.
It was just last night. I can't remember.
Oh, so it must have been real fun then. Yeah.
I spilled some super glue on my fingers, helping my wife get her Halloween costume ready. So I spent the evening picking bits of glue off my fingertips, and she went out and talked to the kids.
Oh. Well, cool.
Which worked fine by me. I can enjoy that activity, but I was okay not doing it this time.
Right.
My 15-year-old son took his 4-year-old cousin out trick-or-treating. Which is great because that's the only excuse you get as a teenager to keep collecting candy.
14?
15.
Okay, 15. 15 he could totally keep. I think the last time that I trick-or-treated ever, 22.
Wow.
I think so. I was hanging with some younger friends at that time, and they were going out, so I just went with them.
Cool.
Well,
I felt bad about it, but, you know. What are you going to do? It's in the past. No, I can't undo it. I suppose I could find the neighborhood. I could just give them candy back.
That's right. There you go.
I'm sorry.
Reverse trick-or-treat.
These aren't the same ones, folks, because those are long gone.
Well, I've been really enjoying the flood of entertainment that people, I guess, save up for this time of year.
Uh-huh.
So, went through the new Stranger Things in a few days and have been playing a whole lot of Wolfenstein, the New Colossus.
Ooh, nice.
Those are good.
Awesome.
And I'm not going to say too much about Stranger Things, because I assume lots of our audience is still planning to watch it, and maybe some of them haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm part myself some Wolfenstein. Yeah,
I'm part way through.
Yeah,
part way through.
Yep. All I want to say is Samwise Gamgee gives very bad advice. That's it.
In Stranger Things?
Yes, in Stranger Things.
Well, I've also been watching, weirdly, I've been watching The Fog. They made it into a series.
A series?
How do you do a Well, what you do is you just do an incredibly long, like, horror movie.
Did it just come out?
Well, I just got it on Netflix, but I imagine it's a year old. And I don't know if it got a season two.
I'm thinking it might have been bandwagoning on the success of Stranger Things.
It's not attempting to hit the Stranger Things vibe at all. It's more like just an incredibly long, extended, episodic horror movie. Where you know, maybe if you're lucky, a day passes between episodes. Otherwise, it's like, you know.
Right.
Meanwhile, this is happening. Meanwhile, this is happening. Meanwhile, this is happening. It just goes on. It's okay. There's some fun anti-religion stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unfortunately, so far, it's anti-religion in order to be pro-pagan. So it's anti-Christianity in order to be pro-pagan. Yep. So I don't know. I don't know where that's going.
Okay. I'm also happy to say that Wolfenstein definitely scratches that fighting a whole lot of Nazis itch.
Good.
And weirdly, for a game that started out as, I mean, a series that basically started out as one of the very first first-person shooters, and the plot was basically, you're in a castle full of Nazis, go shoot them.
Kill them all, yeah.
This is... This and the last game, The New Order, are some of the better plotted first-person shooter games that I've played in a
while. I'll have to give it a try.
Is the plot still you're in a castle full of Nazis, go shoot them?
No, now you're in alternate 1960s New York shooting a lot of Nazis. But, I mean, and sometimes on the moon.
On the moon shooting Nazis.
Yes,
well, I Nazis understand they have them up there now.
Yeah, so. But I mean, what actually makes the game feel good plot-wise is not just all the Nazis you get to mow down. It's that there's a lot of pretty good, entertaining characters. And if you hang around them for a while, they have conversations with each other that are very funny to listen to.
Oh, cool. All
right. And there's the whole vibe of being the scrappy resistance fighters in a world gone crazy, which is timely, you know.
Mm-hmm. He totally aced that maze thing, though, don't you think? Sam Gamgee. I'm leaping out of one topic to another.
Without
warning.
To kind of avoid spoilerism by just confusing people instead. All right.
There's a certain level of bullshit in Stranger Things, because... When I saw that maze, I was like, that's clearly just a whole bunch of lines. There's not enough context to solve that puzzle.
Shush. I've heard one thing where people were complaining, it's unrealistic because the kids get to go out for hours and hours and hours without their parents. And I go, boy, have I got a story to tell you. Yeah. I mean, that's how it used to be, kids.
I don't know about the 80s. Neither of us were kids in the 80s.
I was.
Yeah, well, when I was kids in the 70s and stuff like that, we'd leave the house at 9 in the morning and, you know, we'd be back, maybe when the lights, you know, when the street lights came on, you know, we'd be riding our bikes all over the neighborhood.
Sure.
I'll tell you what's unrealistic about
day.
That's right.
We used to ride our buses, bicycles all around.
In fact, reading that criticism is what prompted the intro.
Was it?
Yeah.
In my day.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. I'll tell you what's unrealistic, though. Those kids have gotten real far in Dragon's Lair. And I don't think they have that much money.
See, this is why we can have nice things, but people won't admit that they're nice because they insist that those things be perfect.
No, they'll just claim that they're strange.
Yeah. Stranger.
All right. So, how about some
Yeah.
How about some listener mail?
All right.
All right.
Okay. You said there wasn't any news. Nothing has happened in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It has. Well, I mean, things have happened in the news, but not necessarily things that are
relevant,
super relevant.
Or, yeah.
It's just an interesting popcorn show in U.S. politics.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, this is something that Genevieve on Facebook wanted us to talk about, which is that Kim Davis. You may remember her.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Wow, that was 2 years ago already that she was
How can
in
I remember her name?
For
but I guess so.
Fighting against the court mandated now gay people are allowed to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. This past week, a federal judge ruled that Kentucky taxpayers are still on the hook for attorney fees for the couples who sued Kim Davis, a county clerk who refused to issue marriage license to same-sex couples after the historic U.S. Supreme Court decision legalizing gay marriage.
Mm.
In July, U.S. District Judge David Bunning ordered Kentucky to pay $222,000 to the attorneys of April Miller and others after they won a favorable judgment against Davis.
Wow.
Bunning also awarded an additional $2,000 in other costs. Governor Matt Bevin and Terry Manuel, commissioner of the Kentucky Department for the Libraries and Archives, appealed the ruling, claiming the fees should be assessed against Davis and the Rowan County Clerk's Office.
Everyone's pointing fingers. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's something to that, but I don't think Kim Davis personally has that much money. So.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. And I've also been reading that she's reinvigorated in her going around fighting against gay marriage in whatever way she can. So, I don't know. Take her for everything she's got.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stefan says,
yes.
I have recently managed to catch up on the last two podcasts you did. This is old listener mail.
Uh-huh.
This letter
didn't
make it onto the air last episode, I think. And I've been wrong before. So if it starts sounding incredibly familiar, stop me and we'll move on.
It's worthy of...
On episode 1616, you discussed, based on Dennis's question, who was the first person to set foot is in scare quotes.
Right.
Because, of course, he's dead, right? He's got no corporeal form, so no feet. into heaven. As far as I can remember from religious classes, way back when I was about 10-ish and a theist, I am from Romania and was an Orthodox Christian. I'm 27 now. Our professor said that until Jesus was killed, the gates of heaven were closed and nobody could get in.
Huh.
The people who deserve to get in, I think she mentioned Adam and Eve among them, were waiting in hell at like something resembling the DMV, where you wait endlessly for your ticket number to be resurfaced.
Wow.
Sort of like Beetlejuice.
Yeah. As for the first person to get into heaven, now see, that's weird, because wouldn't you think the first person would still be the person with ticket number one at the DMV?
You would think
And not the first new person.
Why would you let...
How did they sift those people in?
Why would you let A&E in anyway? They're the first people who disobeyed.
Yeah.
It seems completely counter to the whole deal.
They have more story after.
Oh, okay.
There's a chance that they got forgivified and stuff.
Forgivification. Right.
Well, back in my day. I mean, it's weird. How would they? Then at what point did those people waiting in the DMV get to go? If
the moment Jesus resurrects or something?
That they start letting in the fresh people and not the waiters.
Weird.
But not the people waiting. Not the wait staff.
No.
As for the first person to get into heaven, that was the guy who was crucified next to Jesus that accepted Jesus in his last few minutes before he died. I'm not sure if you guys are at all familiar with this detail or if it's just our denomination or just something our professor believed to be true.
I know him. He was played by Eric Idle, I believe.
But, wow, nameless. Interesting.
No, I think those guys have names or been given names. All right. It's not a letter.
Barabbas, the thief.
Is that the guy who was next to Jesus?
I think so.
And also sang...
I wasn't raised with this stuff. How do I know more than you?
And and also the guy who sang Look on the Bright Side of Life, that guy.
So he gets
played by Eric Idle.
He gets to walk through the holy gates, dance around going, first.
Right? Yeah, because in heaven you get, your own new house and stuff. He had the run of the place.
That's right.
As long as he was faster than all the other souls that got to heaven.
Yeah.
I don't know how he could have been because none of them had any feet. But
it's like opening the doors on Black Friday.
Yeah, crowd. They go.
Yeah.
What would be considered a good neighborhood? He might not even know because what else was there yet. So, what if he picked a place he thought was going to be an awesome neighborhood and then it filled up with Jews or something?
I don't know.
I don't know what Barabbas. Personal bigotries were, but
even if, I think I may have been maybe wrong.
Maybe he didn't like Samaritans or something.
I think Barabbas was the guy they freed instead of Jesus.
Okay.
In Life of Brian, that would be the scene where they're all like, right. Release Wadwick.
Yeah.
Luis Barabbas.
Barabbas.
So that was the first way to get into heaven, was the guy next to Jesus.
Interesting. Okay. That's not interesting, actually.
Which makes sense, right? Because, yeah. The moment of Jesus' death, I guess you'd have to get this expanding area wave of
right.
of Jesus' freedom.
So Jesus
going out from him,
zero.
The closest person would have been that guy.
The first, yeah. The speed
By
light.
Then, I guess the Romans that had been stabbing him had gone away because they might have been... Huh. I guess if it's a spherical effect, maybe they could have still been farther
saved.
Away than
That's
the guy
possible.
Over to the side.
Yeah.
I'm pestering the. This is Stefan going on. I am pestering my friends to get me a Bible as a birthday/Christmas gift, as I would like to read it entirely, but don't want to spend money on it.
Right.
I can afford it, but don't want to support it. Well,
why don't you just read the Skeptic's Annotated Bible for free online?
You realize whether you buy it or your friends buy it and give
Somebody's
it to you,
money
has changed hands. If you must, go to a hotel and steal one, right? Which I'm not entirely clear, but I think you're allowed to take those.
Yeah, well, that's why the Bible, because if you take it, you're just doing
unless somebody has already played Hide the Bible in there recently, you should be able to walk off with one for free. The cost of the room.
Could be a Gideon's Bible.
P.S. Dennis is my favorite.
No.
Oh.
Then I do apologize. I do apologize for not having read that last episode because we had a theme going of people that had favorites amongst us.
Favorites.
Okay. And
our listeners are my favorite.
And news?
Oh yeah. So
yes.
Okay. This is something that I tweeted myself after running into it a couple of weeks ago.
Tweet it to yourself.
Yeah, because I use hashtag nonprofits news to stash all the stories that I might want to look at when a show starts.
That's hashtag nonprofits news?
Yes.
Cool.
Hashtag nonprofits news.
A Chapman University survey found that a majority of Americans now believe in ancient advanced civilizations, and a third believe in ancient astronauts.
Oh, boy.
What? Okay, what is this place?
Okay.
Who goes there?
Chapman University?
Yeah.
I do not know the answer to that off the top of my head.
I mean, is it a...
It appears to be
one of those mail-in universities?
Do you want to Google it while I'm trying to read the story?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Chapman, you say?
Yes. The Chapman University Survey of American Fears, Wave 4, includes a battery of items on paranormal beliefs ranging from Bigfoot and psychic powers to visits by aliens and haunted houses. The most common paranormal belief in the United States is currently, and I wonder, do they count religion as one of the paranormal beliefs?
I don't know. Is
the belief that ancient advanced civilizations such as Atlantis once existed, with more than half the respondents agreeing or strongly agreeing with the statement.
I guarantee you they did not include Christianity among the supernatural beliefs. You know why?
There's more believers in Christianity?
Because Chapman University is a private nonprofit university located in Orange, California, United States, affiliated with the Christian Church.
Well, then it, I guess, was a good thing for you
and
to ask.
First thing on their site is a big ad for Stranger Things. Bizarre.
What?
I doubt they put that up themselves. That's not how internet ads work.
I was looking on Wikipedia.
Which
doesn't have
ads
for Stranger Things. All right.
Yeah, they do have like a full screen thing on Stranger Things. It's not just a banner ad
or
something.
Bizarre.
I don't know why.
I went to their site and I went, am I in the right place?
Oh, weird.
Huh. Anyway.
Yeah. So it's apparently real.
Yeah, so I guess you were asking that because you are questioning the scientific credibility of the people doing this study. Anyway, there is a list of paranormal beliefs and the percent agreeing or strongly agreeing with them. Ancient advanced civilizations such as Atlantis once existed, 55%. Places can be haunted by spirits, 52%. Aliens have visited Earth in our ancient past, 35%. Aliens have come to Earth in modern times, 26%. And some people can move objects with their minds, 25%.
All right. Well, there's your Stranger Things tie-in.
Yeah.
No. Actually, the reason for that might be that Chapman University encompasses 10 schools and colleges, including the Dodge College of Film and Media Arts.
Huh.
So it fancies itself a little film entertainment industry.
Okay.
Interesting.
School.
Right.
I don't know. I think we can leave off taking this very seriously because, come on.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they conducted the study.
But
Chapman University, the reason they were promoting Stranger Things is because they apparently are presenting the 2017 Alumni Achievement Awards to the Duffer Brothers.
The Duffer Brothers went to Chapman University?
Apparently.
Okay, well then.
Well, who knows what they believe?
Hometown kids made good.
They believe in making a rollicking good TV show.
They sure do.
I'll just tell you that. Okay, so
except for that one weird episode that I'm not going to talk about until you've seen it.
Eric writes, since Christians blame the devil for the evil in the world and for influencing people to join him, why don't they ever pray for him to repent and accept God back, or for God to miraculously touch his heart? Yeah. If Satan is so effective at turning people away from God, imagine all the good he'd do if he was on God's side.
Excellent observation.
Or why don't they pray to God to give people in hell a second chance after they've seen how awful hell is supposed to be? Well, that last one, obviously, the Christians have latched onto this whole faith thing. I don't. Maybe somebody can straighten us out on this. I don't know how big of a deal is made of faith as a thing that it's good to have in the Bible. I imagine that's pretty heavily implied, considering there's no evidence of any of the things they're claiming right. in the Bible. And it's like, well, why should you believe this crazy shit we're writing that we wrote that you're reading now? Because it's good to just believe crazy shit that we wrote.
Right, and give us money.
You're not going to find Christians believing that giving people in hell a second chance is a good idea because they've been conditioned to think that
They've already been judged.
Those people should have believed without any evidence already, and since they didn't, they deserve to be there.
Right.
Eric goes on. What's your opinion? Can you guys or the audience come up with other things Christians should consider praying for but never, ever do? Well, it's not really your job, is it?
They can pray for what they want. It won't have any effect except the very small effect that they will think more about the thing they're praying about, and that might cause them to
they
do something.
Pray that their prayers have an effect.
What if they pray that their prayers don't have an effect?
Oh, dear. Mm-hmm.
Some of them might already be praying that. Because check it out. Or, here, I'll put on my Christian hat for a second.
Yes.
We already are praying for all the wonderful things. You just don't realize how much worse the world would be if it wasn't for all our prayers.
Uh-huh. Sure.
See?
Yeah.
It's such an easy game to play. I don't think that giving people in hell a second chance thing would fly just because they've already kind of written themselves into a corner on that one. But yeah. but the changing Satan around, the answer to that is going to be the same as all the answers about how come God doesn't do X, Y, or Z with regard to Satan. And that is, God's working on it and he's totally going to win. But the reason we have to put up with it is we are in time and God isn't. And so God has totally got it in the bag. But, for him, it's like he's doing it now. Because they have the whole outside of card time to play.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Man. Dennis, I hope you have a long question today.
Uh-oh.
No, I have more news. It's just none of it is really...
He promised us he had a weird question today. Yeah. So that should keep us going for a while.
All right.
I don't know. We'll see.
There's something going on with the EPA,
Environmental
Protection Agency, this week.
No, not just that. There's crap tons of stuff going on in the United States federal government with Christianityism.
Yeah. Now, the story that was referred to me by Jacob on Facebook, thanks, Jacob, is in BuzzFeed or has its origin in BuzzFeed. But then I checked the link that they're getting it from, and it's just a direct link to a long PDF issued directly by E. Scott Pruitt, the current administrator of the EPA.
Okay. Right. The article probably has the digested version.
Yeah. So. The Environmental Protection Agency announced on Tuesday afternoon sweeping changes to who can advise the agency on its research and regulatory priorities, opening the door to more industry participation.
Oh, awesome.
That's a nice euphemism.
Mm-hmm.
Effective immediately, scientists who receive EPA funding cannot serve on the agency's three major advisory groups. So, scientists, no.
Well, scientists that they're giving money to.
Well, okay.
Okay. There can be justifications for things like that.
All right.
I need to know
Let's
more.
Let's find out. We want to ensure that there's integrity in the process and that the scientists that are advising us are doing so without any type of appearance of conflict of interest. Okay. Scott Pruitt said at a press conference, Pruitt used a story from the Book of Joshua to help explain the new policy.
Okay.
On the journey to the promised land, Joshua says to the people of Israel, "Choose this day whom you are going to serve," Pruitt said. This is sort of like the Joshua principle, that as it relates to grants from this agency, you are going to have to choose either service on the committee to provide counsel to us in an independent fashion, or choose the grant, but you can't do both. That's the fair and great thing to do. So,
right. At least okay. He wasn't biased at all in okay. His comments.
So the agency, if I may interpret this, mm-hmm. was hiring scientists to investigate things that might be relevant to the agency directly.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of thing that a private company might well do if they want to figure something out that impacts their industry, or the sort of thing that a government might do if they are trying to like when you want to find things out, you pay people to find them out, which is why we hire scientists to learn things.
Right.
But he says people can advise us for free if they want to.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and what are the standards for who those people are going to be? So there's the red flag. It's like, okay, we've got people presumably whose job it is to identify scientists who have the appropriate chops to study the things that we care about.
Yeah,
and give them grants, but then who's left? Or maybe there's just enough. Maybe there's just enough people to give grants to that they can get the ones that didn't get grants to come yeah. in and advise them. Or maybe this is just a big opening for an excuse not to talk to yes. scientists.
A large coalition of science organizations, science advocates, environmentalists, and politicians lined up in fierce opposition to the policy charges, arguing the rules not only disqualify top environmental and health researchers from advising, but also favor scientists paid for by EPA-regulated companies. There we go. So the people who would traditionally have been overseen by the EPA are now in a better position to say, here, take our scientists.
Right.
Okay.
And yep. somehow that would not be a conflict of interest of the type he brought up. Frankly, this directive is nuts, Al Teach of George Washington University wrote in an email to BuzzFeed News.
In the article, they have picked that line to yeah. put in a little sidebar. Like, frankly, this directive is nuts.
Right.
It's been great big letters.
Yeah, which is why it is a good idea to be cagey around news right. that is being reported by BuzzFeed.
Uh-huh.
But, the change calls into question EPA's ability to protect the country, according to Rush Holt, chief executive officer of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. We question whether the EPA can continue to pursue its core mission to protect human health and the environment, Holt said in a statement issued Tuesday. Pruitt also announced the new chairs of EPA's advisory committee on Tuesday. A toxicologist named Michael Honeycutt is the new head of EPA's Science Advisory Board. Honeycutt once told Congress he didn't agree with the EPA's toxic evaluation for mercury, and he's argued against the agency's ozone standards, according to a 2014 investigation by Inside Climate News and the Center for Public Integrity. And it goes on with more of these yeah. people who are conveniently being lifted to very influential positions within the EPA, seemingly after being targets of the EPA for their work in the past.
Yikes. Yeah, well, science good. Superstitious religion backed ideology bad, right?
Yeah, right. But it's from angle. Joshua.
All right. Well, just in case anybody hadn't already got the message, this is why it's important to be, you know, politically involved.
Yeah.
Okay. Rich says, I think you'd agree that ghostly apparitions, supposedly perceived by lots of people as being transparent entities with no apparent mass, we would agree that that is what people are claiming, is that ghostly apparitions that yeah. they think they have seen are transparent entities with no apparent mass. You can put your hands through them. They walk through walls and appear to float in the air in gloomy places. I'm referring, of course, to the types of ghosts that you see in the movies and those sensational Ghost Hunter TV shows. Here's the problem. Things that have no mass cannot stay in one place on this planet for very long. We're spinning around an axis at phenomenal speeds.
Good point.
Not only that, we're orbiting the sun at speeds of about 18 miles per second. So these guys would never stick to the planet since they have no mass.
Right. You can't even trust the atmosphere to hold them to the planet because nothing can touch them.
Yeah. So I just want to be really clear on this. Is it that maybe you guys know more science than me? Is it that massless things are not affected by gravity?
No, they have no inertia.
Massless things.
And,
things can
not
be
affected
in motion
by gravity.
There could be massless things in motion, though. Presumably,
gravity.
Or is that true? Maybe that's not true.
Gravity specifically attracts any two things proportional to
their
the
mass.
Square of yeah. their the product.
So a thing with no mass would be outside of the grip of gravity.
Sorry, right. the product of their mass is times the square of the distance divided by something like that.
All right. So I don't know why Rich is picking on ghosts.
Well,
because
anything supernatural
is souls.
Yes.
Souls are essentially ghosts that are in a body. But big effing deal, right?
They're somehow attached.
How are souls attached? And that's the thing.
Sure.
If there is some way to justify that attachment, then the soul could get carried along. The
ghost soul could be carried along, just like
a human soul.
There could be some unknown physical law.
It was always the bones of the corpse that you had to, had to put salt on them and burn them.
Right. Magnetism is a similar force to gravity, but it's different. And maybe there's just another force that attracts things based on their spiritual.
The nerd explanation.
It's love.
The nerd explanation would be the reason ghosts are so seldom seen, as they're so rare, is because only certain ghosts have the wherewithal to perform a powered orbit around the sun, a powered orbit following the orbit of the Earth.
Yeah. Where would they get that power from, Dennis, considering they have no mass?
Well, they could get it from a Rayovac. They have no mass. How much power would it take?
I mean, Sam in the movie Ghost barely had enough of his own power to drag a penny across the floor.
Yeah.
And but he worked really hard.
Yeah, but
a
penny has mass, man.
I mean, so according to inertia, like, if your spirit gets free of your body, you know, you are traveling at a certain speed, and unless you keep getting pulled toward the center of the Earth, you just keep going that speed.
But what do you mean if your spirit leaves your body? I mean, there needs to be an explanation for humans' spirits staying in position as much as there needs to be for ghosts.
Yes, that's
If they are the same, essentially
massless thing. Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I know a little bit about this, having designed role-playing games.
Okay.
And
you're the expert.
I know I have a very good grasp of bullshit understanding of these things, right? Because that's what you have to tap into to make like characters like in the Avengers. Everybody knows the Avengers movies, right? The Vision, who can be intangible.
Mm-hmm.
He becomes this thing that can pass through walls, right?
Right.
Okay.
So I think that for most people who are not thinking of this in scientific terms, I don't think they imagine that the Vision or a ghost is really massless. Uh-huh. I think what they are imagining is something more like a cloud. Right.
Sure.
Something just very, very
diffuse, light. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, clouds move along with the Earth as we travel through space. Mm-hmm. So
balloons.
Now, that does
balloons have very little mass and they just sort of bob along. So, yeah.
Right, but they're not, balloons are not, the balloon itself as a complete object is not something you put your hand through.
Right.
Without it popping.
Right.
But a cloud you can.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why this doesn't occur to
sure.
most people, is they don't think of intangibility as a complete lack of mass. Of course, it would kind of have to be to do the things that we see them do in movies, but
yeah.
that just because the movies show you an effect, it's really easy in a movie, relatively speaking, to make an effect that appears to pass through a wall.
Sure.
Right? You just have that image overlaid on your background, and when it gets to a certain point, you make it start going away.
Yeah.
So, but the impression that spirits could be just very tenuous physical things plays against the frickin' claim that they're supernatural, right?
Right.
That they're not physical. So that certainly supports Rich's point.
Uh-huh.
And doesn't explain things like, well, okay, I just saw that ghost supposedly move through a wall. If it is clouds don't do that.
Right.
Clouds need a bunch of little holes.
Yep.
So they can get through. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was very interesting, Rich.
Yep.
But yeah, I think we should totally be picking on spirits, not just ghosts. Because this be like, sure. Pew, Earth moves on and like, bam, nobody's got a soul anymore. They're all just.
That's right.
All the souls are floating around going, shit, what happened? Hey,
yeah.
There goes the Earth.
Look at
it's
that.
Gone.
Look at that.
It's gone.
Wow, it's so
gone.
Cool out
Let's
here.
Let's just wait here. We'll wait here for a year, right?
Yeah.
And come back. And then some ghost of some jackass ghost of a scientist comes floating over and says, well, no. See,
no.
Because the sun is also orbiting around the center
of the galaxy. Sorry.
Anyways, it's never coming back.
And I damn spoil-sport scientist ghost.
I might do some calculations so we could try to work in some sort of an intercept course, but I got nothing to write on.
Got no spiritual paper.
All right. All right. Well, that was fun. Thank you, Rich.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe we should space things out and give Dennis
all
time
right.
to ask his question.
Is it time for your question,
I sure. I have a question.
Yes.
It's kind of weird. It's just I was reading a news report on some, you know, things about pro-life and
uh-huh.
and all that stuff. And
sure.
I'm going, okay, so these states that are starting to write up stuff saying life begins at conception, right?
Yes.
That, in fact, in your womb, in a woman's womb, there is a baby.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Right? That makes for some awkward situations legally.
Okay.
So if a pregnant woman commits a crime, can they throw her in jail? Because if they do, aren't they unlawfully imprisoning a child?
No, they automatically got the fetus on
an accessory
to the crime.
That yeah. must be it.
Yeah, but they are a minor, and there are different rules that apply
yes.
to them.
I mean, so we don't.
They,
so they
could say 1 year old.
So then they could send mom to baby jail.
Yeah, yeah. They don't send they don't send your 1 year old child into prison with you. So why would they imprison?
And I'm
a fetus?
Afraid I haven't
it's,
gotten.
It's weird.
I'm finally watching Orange is the New Black, and I haven't uh-huh. gotten
oh,
to
yeah.
the point where the pregnant inmate has her kid, or they
uh-huh.
haven't gotten far enough through
oh,
the
yeah,
through the thing to see their depiction of how that situation works in
yeah.
prisons, or I would be able to say something more.
Yeah, but
something
it seems,
informed
it seems
by
just,
pop media.
Yeah, you're imprisoning a child. If you consider the fetus a child, you're imprisoning a child in an adult prison.
Yeah.
What
well,
the hell?
I mean, as far as what they do with the kid when it's born,
I mean,
I'm not going to spoil anything, but they don't wind up needing to address that question.
All right, so skip
but,
it.
But, I mean, I think what Dennis is asking is, while she's pregnant, are they unlawfully keeping
yeah.
a minor in adult jail?
And yes, they are. By all technical standards, that's exactly what they're doing.
So let's look at it. Let's move on. Let's move on about 10 months.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. And a woman who's got an infant that she has given birth to.
Right.
Uh-huh.
She performs the same crime.
Yeah.
Right? Does she get to take her baby with her into prison?
No, I don't think so. I think that's the state.
Voluntarily,
takes care of the
if
baby.
She wants
or they
to?
Put it in
yeah, what if she
care?
Wants to? Could she say, but it's my baby. I want to raise my baby.
I doubt it.
Have my baby in me.
I don't know the laws on that, but I doubt you can do that.
I'm very curious what the answer might be, but I also doubt it.
Going to prison, I want to take my dog with me. You know, no.
I have to say, Dennis, I'm slightly tending to not being compelled by your question.
Well, it's not meant to be compelling. It's just being an interesting situation.
Well, all right. I mean, we can discuss it as an interesting situation. But, you know, until we have the technology to remove a fetus from a woman before it's come to term, there's not an option. So it's a predicament.
Too bad.
So it's a predicament.
Yeah.
But that's the fact that the predicament can only be solved in certain ways doesn't mean that we're looking at any irrational or
if the pro-life groups are determined to ignore all practicality
which
they love to do, then this is an issue.
So you're asking how come they're not up in arms about this? Because
that would be a valid thing. They should be.
The reason is no. The reason why they're not up in arms about this is that this is not their issue. Their issue is killing babies, not sending babies to prison. You know, that may seem like a fine point, but you know, they have staked out their territory of what they care about, and this isn't it.
Yeah, but it if you write laws that treat babies as if they're separate individuals, that treat fetuses as if they're separate individuals, then you have to. It would seem to me you'd have to abide by that.
Mm. There's been been a meme floating around Facebook
for a few days now.
A guy likes to it's a little meme that talks about this guy's question. He likes to ask right to lifers is you're in a building that's you're in a pregnancy center that's burning. And you can save one living baby or a case full of frozen embryos.
Right.
Which one do you save?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, people are very excited about this, but I haven't heard it actually asked of right to lifer.
Sure they have their.
And you know from personal experience, you ask some of these tough questions of those folks, and they will weave and dodge
and say
anything other than what they have to say,
right?
Because they don't want to be exposed as being reasonable.
Right, but that is in fact what he says, is that they will dodge and weave.
Yeah.
And not answer the question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which I think is maybe more directly to the point.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look at it another way. A co-joined twin commits a crime.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And the other one
doesn't. Yeah.
Right? Well, you just have... This is a question of weird circumstances running into our law.
Yeah.
That doesn't... It's not necessarily saying there's something terribly awful about our laws.
But, yeah, the conjoined twin is pretty freaking unusual, but pregnancy is not pretty freaking unusual.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah, true.
That's a fair point.
So it's like... I'm sure it happens a lot. And hey, if the Church of Satan wants to, you know, take this to court, that'd be awesome.
How about this way? What if a fetus performs a crime?
There you go.
A fetus performs a crime, And do they lock up just the fetus in baby jail, or does mom have to go with?
I think mom has to go with.
Again, if you're a minor, you typically don't. I don't think there is a baby jail for starters.
I'm sorry, did I just invent that?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sorry, but I don't think that is a legal term.
Do you have anything to say?
Ooh, goo.
Off to jail with you. Baby jail.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we've heard about cases where, like, a five-year-old picks up a gun.
Oh, yeah,
actually,
yeah, yeah.
Accidentally shoots somebody.
Sure. Uh-huh.
They don't send the five-year-old to jail.
No.
If anything, they hold the parent.
You just said accidental. So I'm talking about a fetus that picks up a gun on purpose.
Deliberately kills someone.
Now we don't actually have crimes on the books.
Government's coming for my fetus's gun.
We don't actually have crimes on the books that can be committed by a fetus, but Christianity does, because Christianity totally has thought crimes.
Yeah,
right. So all you got to do is have a fetus that wants something, and it's a person, right?
Right.
It could be wanting things in there. Right.
Yeah.
All it has to do is want something, and it's guilty of the crime of avarice or whatever they
call it. A sin of avarice.
Sin of avarice. Yeah.
Yeah. And hey, so you could say if a fetus wants something, it uses its cuteness to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, that's not a crime for adults.
However, within Christianity, they don't have the same problem,
right?
Because the mom has been saved.
Yeah,
baby commits the sin of avarice by wanting something that it doesn't have.
Yeah,
right. And then they're hit by a car and they both die. In Christianity, you can totally separate the baby soul from the mom soul and send it different places.
Yes, so
it's not an issue.
Not an issue.
And
not
the mom will allegedly be happy about it.
Yes.
Because there is no sadness in
heaven. That's, of course, assuming that both their souls didn't get left behind in deep space a long time ago.
Wait, for having
no mass.
Just to floating in empty space going, well, this sucks.
Well, Your Honor, the baby made it clear that if I give it the candy, it will be quiet. I gave it the candy. It wasn't quiet. Fraud.
kids cannot sign contracts like underage.
People cannot
enter into agreements like that without parental consent. So...
So anyway, that's my bizarre question.
That was fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we're at the bottom of this yet.
No. Hmm. Are there any other instances where this would cause an issue?
So what you really want to look at then is other consequences of granting the
personhood to
a
fetus.
Unborn fetuses. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. If you won't do it to a child, you won't do it to a fetus. So if the mom goes into prison, you won't throw their one-year-old into prison with them.
Well, no. See, because again,
you got to treat them the same.
Because that's not, in fact, the right to life position. The right to life position is totally okay with doing all kinds of horrible things to people after they're born.
Right. Yes. Yes.
They want the special treatment only for the fetuses.
Only for the fetuses. And throwing the fetus in prison with the mother would be special treatment, I guess. Sort of a negative sort of special treatment.
Yeah. Oh no, that makes their position more untenable. I think you're onto something there.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, we can let that go.
All right. excuse me.
Is it it's your turn, right?
Is it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay.
Turn. Oof.
I received. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Where was I? Gotta keep my tax. Gotta keep
better
my
to
tabs
give,
straight.
You know.
This one is from Skeptic Mom on Twitter.
Ah.
You guys know about Dan Barker, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
He's a former minister.
I've met him.
Who has recently been going around challenging churches' tax privilege.
Oh, has he?
This month, a federal judge in Wisconsin did, in fact, rule that tax-free housing for clergy is constitutional. And in Texas, a federal judge ruled that the governor infringed on an atheist group's constitutional rights when he removed their winter solstice nativity. And these are both as a result of Dan Barker bringing these cases on behalf of the Freedom from Religion Foundation.
Okay.
There's some backstory on Dan Barker, which I don't think we need to go into. But let's see. Wow, there's a lot of backstory on Dan Barker. It's practically a profile.
Look him up, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just read his books. Or read one of them. They're a little repetitive. let's see. In some ways.
Nice. I should take.
No.
Throwing poor Dan Barker under the bus.
Sorry. Read them all.
Crapping on his books.
Dan Barker is excellent.
Losing faith in faith is nothing at all like maybe yes, maybe no.
No. I mean, the children's books are totally different, okay. And you should order copies of them for your kids.
Yeah.
Losing Faith in Faith has a lot of the same stories as Godless, I think.
Mm.
Anyway, the religious landscape, says the Christian Science Monitor, which I have to repeat whenever I read a story from the Christian Science Monitor, they are a real newspaper, notwithstanding. The religious landscape has begun to shift profoundly. Like Barker, millions of Americans have left their faiths. Unlike Barker, many still believe in God, but they have become nuns, or those who no longer identify with or trust religious institutions. Even among evangelicals, declining membership has revealed a growing split between young Christians and church elders as millennials more and more reject their church's conservative activism and opposition to same-sex marriage.
Just to be clear, nuns spelled N-O-N-E-S.
Correct. There is a trend in the United States toward challenging the privileges that churches and other religious groups have enjoyed throughout the nation's history, says Lloyd Hitoshi Mayer, professor of law at the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. A growing number of people have continued to question the reasoning behind various kinds of tax benefits religious groups have long received. In Wisconsin, U.S. District Court Barbara Crabb ruled that the IRS's parsonage allowance, which allows ministers of the gospel to exclude mortgage payments, utility bills, and other housing-related expenses, was a violation of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause, essentially respecting religion over other groups.
Mm-hmm.
Should I keep going?
Sure.
I mean,
Yeah.
A desire to alleviate financial hardship on taxpayers is a legitimate purpose, but it is not a secular purpose when Congress eliminates the burden for a group made up solely of religious employees but maintains it for nearly everyone else, Crabb wrote.
Right.
The important point is that many equally deserving secular employees, as well as other kinds of religious employees, could benefit from the exemption as well, but they must satisfy much more demanding requirements, despite the lack of justification for the difference in treatment. It goes on to say that the Supreme Court in 1970 affirmed the tax-free status of churches, saying certain entities that exist in harmonious relationship to the community at large should not be inhibited in their activities by property taxation or the hazard of loss. So those properties for non-payment of taxes. But many have begun to question whether religious groups do indeed exist in a harmonious relationship within the community. especially yes. as many conservative churches have become more aggressively partisan.
Right.
Which we talk about almost every show these days.
I'm just going to take a moment here to point out that is so totally a non sequitur. You know, I mean, because 98% of what those organizations are supposed to be harmoniously doing for the community is saving their souls, which is not a thing. It's not a thing that the government should be recognizing as a service in the first place.
Right.
I mean, that'd be like, the lady in the hut on the corner that'll read tea leaves for you is providing the same kind of service for the public.
Yeah, should she be tax exempt as well?
I think it would be fair to identify the things that religions do that are helpful to people, and there are things.
But
finish my sentence.
Yeah, okay.
but then define and outline those things from a secular point of view, and then just give the tax exemption to anybody who does them.
Well, that's fine. Maybe. If churches were required to report their budgets and stuff, which they're not.
Right.
So there's no, I mean, they make big claims about things that they do for the public, but every analysis I've seen that, you know, tries to get at what's actually going on shows that these institutions are less helpful to the community. They're less actually charitable than traditional charitable organizations that do have to report.
Right.
So, yeah.
I mean, for an example of what I'm talking about, one of the stories that got submitted this week that I won't wind up reading in full, but it's an interview with someone who is an atheist chaplain at a hospital, and there are, I'm sure, things that chaplains do that don't require religious involvement. Like if you're a person who's very sick or maybe dying and you need someone to talk to and receive some kind of comforting human interaction, that's something that religious people are maybe capable of doing, as are non-religious people who have basic compassion. So if you were going to define services that are for the public good that maybe shouldn't be taxed, let's define them and not tie them to some kind of belief in a sky god or something.
Yeah. Do those kinds of like hospital chaplains pass collection plates and shit?
No, I'm pretty sure they don't.
I mean, they don't too.
She's on the payroll of the hospital.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. So you said Notre Dame. I just want to clarify that you meant D-A-M-E and not D-O-M.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce.
Is it indeed?
It's French.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
not. Oh, we're going to get letters.
It's all French.
I mean, okay, people in Indiana probably all say Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Just like people in Austin are all very proud of saying
Manchac,
Guadalupe,
and Guadalupe,
all the other
Spanish words that we seem to gleefully and intentionally mispronounce here.
Right.
Yes,
it's just an Austin thing. You guys wouldn't understand. Yeah. Unless
you we apologize on behalf of Austin. Alrighty.
Anyway, keep it up, Dan Barker.
Yeah.
And, keep writing books. They're great.
Oh, now they're great.
Now that you called me out.
That's right. Speaking of pronunciation, Andrew says, I caught a relatively recent episode where you read out a message from someone saying that the Bob and Doug McKenzie Canadian accent was not based on an actual one and that no one speaks like that. Did we in fact?
I'm not sure.
I guess it sounds vaguely familiar. I guess we must have. And my response, since I can't remember, I don't remember what I might have said. But right now, my first reaction is, Well, those comedians were both Canadian. Surely they would be referencing something. Anyway, Andrew says, it may have changed with globalization, etc., but at least back in the 80s and 90s, that is exactly what a lot of people from the Hamilton, Ontario area sounded like.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, it's very, I mean, any kind of accent is liable to be subject to regional differences.
Sure.
And I think people who are near the area that's being parodied are often kind of... they often kind of rush to say, we don't actually sound like that, and not take dialects into account.
Uh-huh.
Because I've done an accent where for the same episode, somebody wrote to me saying, that's a stupid American accent
right.
that you did. And then somebody else saying, that sounds just like people from my area.
Right.
We do stupid American versions of accents on this show all the time.
For and sure.
I can't speak for you two guys, but for me, I love the sound that I'm trying to get. That I think all of those accents are deliciously wonderful.
Yes.
And, yes, they are loving parents.
And fun and positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to...
Even
the funniness.
Cruz.
The funniness is the way we're getting it wrong, not the way the actual people sound, in my opinion. And, you know,
that's a nice way to put it.
Wrong, people will keep hammering on us and we'll stop at some point because we're jerks. we won't stop because we're jerks. We'll stop because we'll realize that we've been jerks.
Yes.
Thank you, Andrew, from who he didn't say what part of Canada he was from, but presumably he's been to the Hamilton, Ontario area.
Yeah.
How about, do you have your thing, Russell?
Yeah, I think I already talked about the fact that I'm playing Wolfenstein The New Colossus.
Yeah.
And I love an excuse to circle back to it, which is why it's the subject of Shit Internet Apologists Say.
Seriously? This is a religious attack on Wolfenstein?
So it's a mild attack on Wolfenstein, which is kind of in the form of just asking questions.
Sure, but you can tell sometimes what the ideology is from the nature of those questions.
The source is World Religion News, which I don't think is necessarily a super apologetic source all the time. But in this case, I looked around and saw this article cited by a whole bunch of more right-wing organizations.
Okay.
So
let's see what it has to say.
Hitting a nerve. It's relatively short, so I want to take a second to contextualize this by saying the marketing for Wolfenstein has been pretty savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when I'm being manipulated by a marketing campaign.
Yeah.
So, you know, since the 90s, the series has just been about mowing down Nazis. But there have been a lot of things about actual neo-Nazis in the news lately. And I think that the people behind Wolfenstein kind of gleefully stoked the fires a little bit.
Sure.
So the Wolfenstein account on Twitter... on October 27th, which I think may have been the day the game became available, did a short interview on Vice News where he was like, oh, yeah, it's just like killing Nazis like it always has been. And some people are choosing to see it as an attack on their group. And, you know, fuck those guys.
Right.
And I don't know how many groups are actually feeling like this thing is at them personally, but it doesn't hurt Wolfenstein's sales, I bet, to stir this pot.
Not at all.
All right, so World Religion News says, some feel Wolfenstein 2 is a metaphor for Trump's America. Also, by the way, this was submitted by Justin Looney on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Justin. It would seem that a video game that focuses on killing Nazis would be controversial, but it would...
would not be controversial?
I'm looking for the word not in there.
And you're not finding it?
But about the excessive violence and not the portrayal of Nazis.
Ah.
Nazis are the universal enemy, used countlessly in entertainment as bad guys because it's almost guaranteed that no one would complain about Nazis being misunderstood. That seems to have changed in Wolfenstein 2.
To be fair, it's Nazis and robots are the universal enemies that you can mow down great swaths of without anybody, without anybody complaining until now. And so far, so now we're left with robots. And that's not going to last.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, I jumped to another link about with the headline "Neo-Nazis Decry Multicultural Anti-Nazi Video Game," which is back in June when the trailer came out. So that might be a good thing to hop to if this article isn't exciting. But
wow,
some critics are calling the video game Wolfenstein 2: The New Colossus an attack on religion and conservative political movements. The game is set in an alternate timeline where the Nazis have won World War II. The player fights through a Nazi-controlled America trying to free it from their oppressive rule. The problem is some of the imagery is being called an attack on America's religious and political conservatives.
Really?
Well,
perhaps maybe, they shouldn't match the...
maybe Americans' religious conservatives oughtn't stand quite so close to Nazis.
Yes.
That was their call.
Yeah.
To embrace that. And so if they then get caught in some of these, the fire that's directed at Nazis, it's their own damn fault.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, we're coming up on the part that made me think this is actually worth reading.
Okay.
Yeah. There are scenes in the trailers of Nazis and Ku Klux Klan members openly working together, and this has been interpreted by some conservatives as suggestive that religious organizations are equivalent to Nazis.
They're calling the Ku Klux Klan a religious organization.
Interesting.
Yes. Okay. That seems like a fair admission.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're relating to Nazis, but they are saying that by putting the Ku Klux Klan in there, you're attacking someone they do relate to. Am I
wrong? Clearly, what they are steadfastly not recognizing distinctions between good and bad religious organizations.
Right.
There are either religious organizations that you have to leave alone and say nothing bad about, right?
Right.
And then there's everything else. And so, yeah, I think they've played their hand. Go ahead.
Yeah. The game's tone of revolution against an oppressive regime has been seen as a not-so-subtle attack on the presidency of Donald Trump and his policies, including the protection of religious freedom and Christian ideology.
Are there other Christians in this game depicted other than the Klan?
I haven't gotten to any Klan yet, but I will say that the opening level has some flashbacks to a childhood with an abusive father.
Because I'll tell you, actually, it hasn't been just Nazis and robots that people have been able to mow down huge swaths of for years, because it's also the Klan.
Yeah.
Thanks to Superman.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
The abusive father in the flashback is presented as very Southern, the kind of authoritarian father. He is definitely Klan material because he gets pissed at his son dating a black woman. So there's that.
Okay.
I don't have the ability to go back in time and find out whether during the, I'm going to say, late 90s.
Uh-huh. Oh,
whether
early 90s. If you're talking,
I'm talking about something that I haven't identified yet.
Okay.
Please don't leap to conclusions. Yep. The prevalence of right wingers among computer game makers in some corners of the industry, right? Whether that attracted attention and complaints analogous to this. Because, see, I worked on a computer game back in the early 90s called Master of Orion. Mm. It's a space conquest strategy game. And then there was I left that company. Then there was a Master of Orion 2. And then there was a Master of Orion 3, which didn't go over very well. And then a few decades passed. And then I got brought in as a consultant on a new updated Master of Orion game by the new owners of the trademark. And that part of my help on that game as a consultant was to go over the fiction that had evolved over the course of these three games. Mm-hmm. And I was sickened and livid with rage when I found out. See, here's the thing. It's a strategy game, right? It's not role playing.
Yeah.
And it's weird to have a history for it because every time you sit down to play, you're starting over, right?
Yeah.
The humans and the Bolrathi and the Darlocks and all the alien races that there are to play are starting over again at the beginning of each new game. Not only that, at the beginning of each new installment in the series, you were starting over again, right?
Right.
As if the previous game had never happened. But the fiction was written as if it had. And so some right-wing asshole on the third game had written this thing to explain the loss of all the accomplishments in the previous installments by these civilizations by saying, oh, it got so liberal that they were against technology and the evil liberal governments that had taken over all these planets forced everybody to take apart their spaceships and go back to nature. I kid you not.
Okay.
That was the fiction.
Wow.
That right wing assholes at the company that made Master of Orion 3 wrote.
Okay.
That also reminds me of when Scott Card, Orson Scott Card,
yeah.
Kind of went full.
Yeah.
Trying to think of the right term to use, but he got, after 9/11, he got real conservative Christian, and he actually went back and started writing sequels to his old good books where he started bringing in a bunch of this stuff. Like,
I think there was
a sequel to Ender's Game where they were trying to outlaw Christmas on the battle station or something.
Oh, good.
I'm not kidding.
Look that up. Have you ever heard his secular humanist revival meeting?
Yes, you gave me the tape.
Yep. But he used to be really cool. For a religious guy, he was about as cool as you can get.
Yeah.
And then it all went to shit.
Yep.
The book I mentioned is called A War of Gifts. Stuff about the alt-right emerging from a certain segment of the gamer community, which appears to be the case, I was not surprised. I was only surprised that it continued to spread and fester.
Right.
But I knew it was out there.
Yeah.
From shit like that. Also, I think since we're talking about Wolfenstein. Mm-hmm. Let's not. Oh, should I say Stein or Stein?
I think it's Wolfenstein.
Wolfenstein. I'll say Wolfenstein, and we'll get
Frankenstein.
Letters.
Frankenstein.
I played Wolfenstein 3D.
3D,
right?
Yeah.
And it's at least of in addition to being about killing Nazis, it's also about like watching scantily clad go-go girls in special.
What? No.
That was a Wolfenstein, wasn't it? Oh, you're right. I take it back. Thank you for correcting me on that. You're right. Yeah. Yes, no. That was Duke Nukem.
The only sexy stuff is bigger Nazi robots trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Robot
all right.
Nazi Hitler.
Phew. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. Let's move on then.
Well,
apologize for my mistake.
I'm not going to read more of this article, but one of the links. It kind of wraps up soon.
Sure.
But one of the links that I got to from the article was a page on The Verge, which collects a short compendium of asshole alt-right comments on the YouTube video of the Wolfenstein trailer.
Trailer, okay.
So one of the YouTube comments said, "This game looks like an SJW's wet dream. Fighting actual Nazis, black women being racist toward white people, and an actual resistance that will probably succeed in this fictional world."
Wow.
Wow.
Another guy says, "Too many N-words. Sorry, but..." And he's not complaining about the language. He says...
Nazis.
No. The other N-word.
Oh, okay.
"In the trailer, there are too many black people."
Right. Oh, God.
Oy.
"Sorry, but I don't buy that the only resistance fighters are..." "black people and women. When Bethesda goes SJW, you know the gaming industry is fucked."
Wow.
Here's another one. "The trailer looks really good. However, my one fear is that this game will have a Black Lives Matter overtone. Please, Bethesda, do not give in to the PC pressure. Wolfenstein is supposed to be the most offensive game out there. Don't let the PC police curb your game making."
It's not a... Wow.
I mentioned that this game and the previous one have been kind of really different from...
They've been really different from their original
mindless shooter roots because... Yeah. The character,
the writing.
Like the main character, is this conflicted but very heroic, noble guy who thinks a lot about trying to do the right thing and deals with exhaustion and PTSD and stuff like that.
Huh.
It's way more thoughtful than you would think about a game mowing down Nazis.
I will have to try it.
I'll just read one more. "I'm sick of this." I think this one is probably a parody.
Ah, okay.
But the problem with parody is it's hard to tell the difference.
It is.
But he starts off, "I'm sick of this anti-Nazi propaganda. My grandpa was a Nazi," and that one's probably parody.
You said that this will probably not hurt their sales.
No, I think it'll help.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it will do is it will hurt their sales with Nazis.
Sure.
Yeah.
And help their sales with a bunch of other people. And I'm sure somebody at the corporation has taken a look at the likely outcomes and those numbers and made a call.
Yeah.
And, you know, what this is... I posted a thing on... or shared a thing on my Facebook wall just recently, which is film of a Nazi rally in New York City in the 1930s.
Yeah.
And it's horrific to watch, but it's also incredibly positive and uplifting to watch, and here's why. Okay. They filled Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
And they tromped around with giant like swastika banners and crap, right? And did their little evil fascist racist speeches and shit.
Right.
And that's as far as they got.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the peak of their movement in the United States, and they still lost. I think that is the takeaway message, and that's what I would like to draw the attention of actual Nazis to, is look, this that is as good as it's going to get. Take a good hard look, and then be prepared to shut up and go away, because that's what is going to happen. And we're not going to have to hear from you people for another few decades.
That would be nice.
The in the real world, there are just not enough freaking Nazis for them to get real traction. There are exactly enough to piss people off.
Yep.
And mission accomplished, if that's what you wanted, is to piss people off.
Well played, guys.
Some of those people are going to be willing to punch you in the face. Congratulations.
Yep.
All right. Well.
And it's like that first article you were reading from was talking about, mentioned about, they're going to feel misunderstood.
Oh.
And I go, believe me, you're not missing the Nazis. They're not misunderstood. Perfectly. We know exactly where it all leads.
If you're complaining that Nazis and or KKK members are portrayed in a negative light, maybe you should reevaluate your life choice.
Yeah, check history.
Okay. We're running low on time.
Are we?
We asked for information on what's up with the gay marriage referendum plebiscite thing in Australia. Mm-hmm. And Jess sent us a really detailed, helpful thing.
Wow.
And I don't know if I can get through it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Should I try?
Yeah, please.
Jess says, to clear up your confusion on the latest show, a referendum in Australian terms is a vote by the Australian people to change the construction, the country, change the constitution, and is legally binding upon the government.
Oh, okay.
So I guess that's how they change their constitution in Australia, is they have a referendum. Maybe I'm not understanding this. Let me just keep going. Marriage is not in the Australian constitution, but is an act of parliament, a.k.a. in terms you might be more familiar with, legislation.
Okay.
A plebiscite is what was initially proposed by the current government. It requires an act of parliament, is a poll on steroids, and is not legally binding. Those steroids being what the government would have to provide, the government would have to provide funding for both sides to put their case. So in order to do this, money had to be available to people on both sides of the issue to make their case. This was defeated in the parliament basically on the grounds that it would heavily involve the government funding hate speech and was thus defeated by the opposition. We have two houses of parliament, House of Representatives and Senate, much the same as your Congress and Senate. You mean our House of Representatives and Senate. And passed our House of Representatives, but was defeated by our Senate. Note at this point that marriage equality has been a live issue in Australia for years, and our current government, majority in the House of Representatives, but relies on friendly third parties in the Senate, and didn't get them this time, is against it in general. Note further that a vote on a change to the Marriage Act could potentially be done and dusted in an afternoon. But they, the Australian government, have been forced by public pressure to do something about it, and the whole plebiscite thing was a delaying tactic. Having had the plebiscite idea defeated, they decided to go with a non-binding, non-compulsory, and utterly redundant, expensive postal survey, a term that has no legal meaning and was made up out of whole cloth. Needless to say, polls have been done, and you can guess where they stand. Spoiler, yes. I guess that means yes to gay marriage.
Yep.
But it is apparently worth $122 million Australian dollars to delay just a bit longer. I state again that this postal survey is utterly non-binding. The people of Australia have until 7 November to respond. Most already have. Most yes people hate the idea of voting on basic human rights, whilst realizing that a no vote would be even worse. But the bishop / dickhead mentioned is / was apparently hoping to change a few minds before the 7 November deadline. I hope that clears things up. Wow. Can you guys follow that? It was it's convoluted.
It's government.
It's not so much that it clears things up as it makes me feel a little better about my ignorance, because it's clearly complicated and has been ongoing and gone through several stages. If you use this, feel free to use my name, do a silly accent, and to cut mercilessly. Love the show and cheers. Well,
nope,
Jess,
too late.
That was fascinating.
I used your name, Jess, and thank you very much. It was very informative. I think I'll go study it a bit more so that I really understand what you're trying to tell us. Okay. Yeah. So.
Should I take us out?
All right.
Well, shoot. When we finished mumbling, we didn't much care what people was thinking. We figured we'd do it again on the 15th of November, which is just a fancy way of saying 2 weeks. Then old Brian, he'd come around, start up on his harmonica, thinking he's some sort of satellite or something, and eventually we'd just sort of trail off, and it didn't matter much, just sort of not listening.
Don't you know, the guy upstairs left us years ago, so there ain't no fakes except the one you make, and there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt, and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.